and welcome to the Richard Hunter interview. As ever, this is a place where I'll be discussing matters of interest with a whole range of investment experts. In this episode, I'm delighted to welcome back Tom Slater, Joint Manager of the Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust. Tom is head of the US equities team and is a decision maker on long-term global growth portfolios. He joined Ballygifford in 2000 and became a partner of the firm in 2012. After serving as deputy manager for 5 years, Tom was appointed joint manager of Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust in 2015. During his time at Ballygifford, he has also worked in the developed Asia and UK equity teams. His investment interest is focused on high growth companies, both in listed equity markets and as an investor in private companies. He graduated with a BSc in computer science with mathematics from the University of Edinburgh in 2000. So just by way of reminder, perhaps first of all, could you go over again the basic investment style and objectives for the trust, please?
Yeah, sure. The objective of the trust is really quite straightforward. We aim to identify the world's most attractive growth companies and where we find them to be very long-term and patient owners. And that search takes us to a very geographically diverse set of investments. And it also takes us to both the publicly listed companies and private companies.
Yeah, okay. So how does the current sector and country allocation of the trust come together? How does it look?
Well, about half the portfolio is invested in the US. About a quarter of it is in Asia and about a quarter of it is in Europe. But I guess what I would stress within that is actually we don't think country weightings are necessarily particularly helpful. So if you take that US allocation, it is the vast majority of it is allocated to the west coast of the US. It's our allocation to San Francisco and to Seattle. And some parts of Southern California that are really important there. I think the model of capitalism, the type of companies, the dynamism, the innovation is really quite, or has at least been really quite different on the West Coast of the US to what we found in East Coast US capitalism. If you look at sector weightings, again, not something that we look at as the investors, But through the eyes of the index makers, you'd say we have significant positions in consumer discretionary and in technology. The reason we don't look at it is because we don't think either of those descriptions tells you a great deal. Just because the Amazon shopfront is powered by Moore's Law and technology, the opportunities it faces, the profit streams and revenue streams that it's disrupting are ones in retail, first in media and then in more general retail. And we sort of view it through the eyes of what the underlying company is trying to achieve rather than which sector it happens to have been classified into by the makers of stock market indices.
So with that in mind, and just to give us a bit of colour, Tom, could you perhaps talk us through one or two of your top holdings at the moment?
Well, our largest holding is in Moderna, the vaccine maker and an RNA company. But if you look at some of the other holdings, we have significant positions in some Chinese companies. So, for example, Tencent, the social media platform or commercial. I think actually that does a disservice. One of the companies that underpins basically the consumer economy in China. I guess another holding which has been closely associated with the trust over the past 5 years would be in Tesla, the maker of electric vehicles. But if I was to pull sort of a common thread amongst those top holdings, it's companies that are going after really big opportunities where we think that there is some edge that they have in the way that they approach that task that allows them to convert that opportunity into attractive products for their users, to create value for all the partners in that ecosystem, and ultimately, as a result of that, create value for shareholders.
So the recent overhang in terms of regulatory crackdowns in China, for example, that's not something that's muddying the water for you when we're talking about Tencent.
I think it's muddying the water for everybody. You know, there is clearly a change of atmosphere towards private sector development, the role the private sector plays in the development of society in China. And I think it's, you know, as you see this, the governance layers of the society brush up against commerce and what people are trying to do in the corporate sector, you know, it does create these periods of friction, and we're all trying to work out exactly what it implies. The real question for us is, does it truncate the opportunity set for these big companies? You know, are there going to be limitations on their market power? Are there going to be limitations on their profitability and profit margins? And I think we're working through these issues, but we do it from the standpoint of long-term and supportive owners. So we don't react immediately to news. We try and understand the implications. We try and work with the companies to understand what they're doing about it, rather than making snap judgments.
Now, as we mentioned in the introduction, you also remain committed to searching for investment opportunities in unquoted companies. Why is this, Tom, and what sort of percentage do these represent in your overall portfolio?
If you go back to what we're trying to do, it's to own the world's most interesting and exciting, underappreciated growth opportunities for long periods of time. And our observation has been that companies have been waiting till later in their life cycle to come to public markets. They've been able to fund themselves very easily. As private companies, there's a lot of capital there. Often they haven't required a huge amount of capital because they can use modern tools, modern infrastructure for their business, which is more of an operating cost than a capital cost. And so that means their founders have often stayed in control of their boardrooms. They don't have outside capital pushing them to go public. And so our observation, if you go back 10 years, was that if we're going to maintain that opportunity set, we have to go find these companies where they are. We can't just sort of complacently do what we've always done in public markets, because those companies we've traditionally invested in just aren't there anymore. And, you know, if you sort of want evidence for that, you know, take the example of Alibaba, which first listed on public stock markets when it was valued at $160 billion. You know, the first trade was at $200 billion. If you wanted to capture some of that value creation from zero to 200, you had to be investing in it as a private company. And so, you know, we're not investing in startups. We haven't changed what we're doing. We're investing in companies of scale. And increasingly, we have to go to private markets to find them.
We last spoke in June 2020 at something of a defining moment for markets globally following the impact of the pandemic. How has the trust fared since that time?
Well, the type of companies that we owned have been really important in allowing society, the economy, to continue to function through this period. There are those that are sort of obvious, companies like Zoom, whose video conferencing product has become almost ubiquitous through this period. But there's other companies that help enterprises to function when all their employees aren't sat in one office, they're sat at home. There's, you know, companies like Amazon or Wayfair that have allowed us to continue to buy the products and services that we need when we've been isolated. And there's the healthcare companies that have been centrally important in helping us to find a path out of this current situation. So that has been reflected in the stock prices of a lot of these companies. The performance of the trust has been really strong. And then the challenge for us as managers is saying, has the potential that these companies have been fully recognized by the market and in their share prices, or has the opportunity set fundamentally changed as a result of what's happened? That therefore changes the growth from this point and the value that we should attribute to it.
Sure. So with that in mind, Tom, did the market swings give you opportunities to buy new shares or indeed sell existing ones? And with that in mind also, what is your outlook in terms of where we are at the moment?
Well, the most centrally important opportunity that has been created for us over the past year through the volatility of markets was the opportunity to buy into Moderna at the start of this year. This is a company that we've followed for a long time, and what they are able to do is to program the machinery that exists in the cells of the human body. So rather than programming with zeros and ones to make computer software, it's programming with GTEs, A's and C's, the fundamental genetic building blocks, to help program our cells. And you've seen that most publicly in the incredibly rapid speed that they were able to come up with a vaccine for COVID-19, which has brought the company to much greater attention. Now, as we approached the end of last year, people began to become optimistic that we were going to come out of lockdown, that back to inverted commas normal, and so the shares in Moderna were sold off quite dramatically, and that created an opportunity for us to buy in size. And the reason that we were interested to buy in is because we think what's happened has demonstrated that this technology can have a huge impact way beyond what's happening with COVID, and also that what they've done in COVID will allow them to fund themselves to actually exploit those opportunities. And so we took a significant position at the start of the year. That is now the fund's largest holding at about 10% of the portfolio. So there are opportunities thrown up by the type of volatility that we've seen. For us, it's not about trading stocks because they're 10% too cheap or 10% too expensive, but where there are companies that we've done the work where we really believe in the long-term fundamental story, there can be opportunities, to pick up interesting investments, and that certainly is one.
That's a very interesting point because obviously there are at the moment really rapid accelerations in some of the developments that are being made, not just in terms of medicines and genomics, but on a more broad-based sort of approach. We're also seeing other growth opportunities potentially from AI. Are these areas, apart from Moderna, are these areas that you've got a constant lookout on?
Well, I think they're incredibly exciting areas. If you look at, some of the companies that have been important for Scottish Mortgage over the past 10 years, the likes of Amazon, of Alphabet, of Tencent, of Alibaba, they're taking these tools of modern technology and they've transformed the industries that they operate in, in retail and media. But what we're seeing now is the application of these technologies to healthcare. And healthcare has not seen the impact of technology in anything like the way we've seen in retail or in media. Instead, you've had cost inflation to the point where the healthcare service has become unaffordable. But if you can start to see these technologies that are on these exponential cost decline curves that can improve the outcomes for patients, that evolve and iterate in the way that we've seen in these other areas, then I think that's massively exciting. So we've touched on Moderna. I'll talk about another holding we have, Recursion Pharmaceuticals. What they're doing is transforming the traditional process of drug discovery, which was that you a university professor might have a hypothesis about a potential drug candidate, you'd have a PhD student at a bench for lab bench for 3 months, you know, testing that hypothesis to see what would work. What Recursion Pharmaceuticals are doing is taking a library of hundreds of thousands of potential drug candidates and testing it against hundreds of thousands of disease states in cells induced by the genetics, and then monitoring the progress of those cells. Now, you couldn't hope to process, you know, the output of a million experiments a week using a human at a lab bench. Instead, they have one of the world's fastest supercomputers. They're using AI to process those results. And the outcome, we think, is much more rapid process of bringing drug candidates into the clinic, and a much cheaper process of bringing drug candidates into the clinic. And that's but one example. So I think this whole area of the intersection of healthcare and the tools of modern technology is one that's going to be really important for us if we look out and what drives returns over the next 10 years.
Well, that's fascinating as ever to talk with you, Tom. Unfortunately, that's all we've got time for. So many thanks again for your time, Tom, and for those valuable insights. That's Tom Slater, Joint Manager of the Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust. And thank you for listening, or indeed watching. Please feel free to like and subscribe. And of course, you can find much more by the way of investment insight and ideas at ii.co.uk. I'll be back next Tuesday with another Richard Hunter interview. Bye for now.